We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat.
Pam, we're launching war against two Fs this weekend in London. And this is not just in London, but around the world. Fluoride and Frankenfood.
They both involve polluting the planet. They're both basically involving toxic ingredients, and they're exposing us to these ingredients.
We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore.
So consumers are actually taking on the challenge themselves. We can't, for some strange reason, we can't get through to the government on this. They're not reading the literature. They're not taking on all the new information that we're seeing to say that we should not be using these toxic ingredients.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
There, I think that sets up our two topics very nicely, Pam Colleen.
I agree.
you're laughing at those clips, but this is how so many people feel on these two issues. We got fluoride and we got Frankenfood. We're going to do fluoride in the first half hour, Frankenfoods in the second half hour, because we have two protests in London this weekend.
That's right, because we cannot get through to the government to say that we're fed up with all of this toxicity. We do not want these chemicals in the environment. We do not want them showing up in our water supply, in our bodies. This is something that is just not being regulated properly whatsoever. And we look around us today and we see how incredibly sick we are. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that there's a problem.
And on all of these subjects, as you always do, you bring in experts from around the world. And this morning, we have one from Calgary, where they, in their wisdom, gave the boot to fluoride, a poison that we're still putting in our water here in London. Would you introduce Dr. Beck?
Well, it's a privilege this morning to have Dr. James Beck joining us. He is the co-author of the book, The Case Against Fluoride. He resides in Calgary, Alberta, and he is going to be satellited in on Saturday up at King's College at 4 o'clock for people who want to hear more about what he has to say about fluoride. But this morning we're going to focus on how they were able to get the fluoride out in Calgary, a major, major coup. Good morning, Dr. Beck.
Good morning.
How does it feel to have the most popular mayor in the country?
Well, actually, it's a nice feeling, and it's kind of uncommon, I think.
We'll trade you our mayor for yours. Do we have a deal?
Well, I couldn't negotiate that here.
I should mention that our mayor goes on trial on criminal charges on Monday, but I digress. Dr. Beck, tell us about the city of Calgary. I've lived in the city of Calgary. Good people. Ralph Klein was the mayor when I was there. You've made a decision on fluoride. What was the policy? What is it now?
Well, now we've stopped adding fluoride artificially to the water, and that's been since May of 2011. We're still alive and kicking, and I think healthier.
Well, that is awesome. I don't want to get too deeply into the science of it, because that's when people's eyes glaze over. But basically, why did Calgary, like so many other cities around the world, are now doing or have already done, and that is give a cowboy's kick to fluoride?
Well, the science is important, of course, and it answers for us negatively the two questions: is it effective and is it safe? But the other question, which is extremely important, is it ethical? And in Calgary, well, when I got involved about 12 or 14 years ago, and I spent those years from then until now, or until 2011, lobbying the council. And what happened in the end, we were told by two councillors after the vote to stop fluoridation that the science was kind of overwhelming for them. And of course, they were faced with experts, some real and some phony, from both sides. And they had a very difficult time dealing with that. However, they said towards the end, the preeminent focus for them was on the ethical question. That is one that seems to me very easy to answer.
Well, I want to ask you about the ethics, but I want to illustrate what you're about to say with this. Pam has a glass of water in front of her. Now, I've warned Pam, she's just too energetic. She plays tennis. Her schedule is mind-boggling. So I've got a little drug that I have, and I've read about it a time or two, and I think it'll help to calm her down. So I'm just going to reach over and pour it into her drink when she's not looking. Is that an ethical thing to do, Dr. Beck?
Well, I think no. That's an obvious answer.
But make the comparison. Isn't that what we're doing with fluoride?
Well, exactly. I mean, we have people. I have to have some sympathy with the counselors here in towns and city councils. The law stupidly forces on them the responsibility for this decision, but they're not qualified to prescribe medications. And when you add an artificial substance like hydrofluorosilicic acid to a water supply, you're treating a condition, you're applying a drug, and without the people's consent, a drug that is not approved for human consumption. You're not monitoring the effects on the individuals. The individuals have no option to stop it if they don't want it. It's just all those points, by the way, are violations of medical ethics.
And especially when they truck it in barrels that have cross bones on them. Pam, let me just get your spin on the ethical. Because this, even if you have no interest in the science, or the science is too complicated, and there's so many arguments listen, this book that Dr. Beck and Dr. Connor wrote, like it's 2 or 3 inches thick. So I understand that people feel intent. But just on the sheer ethics
right.
of a government pouring a chemical, which mm-hmm. is a poison, clearly mm-hmm. a poison, into our water supply. The ethics of it.
Well, and Dr. Beck actually alluded to this a second ago. How do you control the dose? And this is what was so frustrating for us when we were trying to educate city councilors and get questions answered by the health unit, is that they cannot control the dose. And every time you ask them about the dosage, how do you dose an 11-year-old child who might be diagnosed with diabetes? How do you dose a 90-year-old female? How do you dose this product? And they always skirt around and change the subject, and suddenly they're talking about concentration, which is a totally different issue. So it's very frustrating to try and get through to some of these officials.
But even if they could control the dose, and even if it were exactly the dose and the concentration were dead on, just the ethics of pouring a poison into our water and arguing that science says it's good
for
our
children. Right. If people want fluoride that badly, they can go out and take a pill themselves, but they don't have the right to impose it on you or me.
Terrific. So there are three issues here. One is the ethical issue. We've just dealt with that. Secondly, Dr. Beck, if you could address, we're just assuming, and I'm saying the masses, Pam, we won't mention names, but you just said there's someone running for City Hall right now who is against fluoride, but they are not being open about it because they think...
Oh, the candidates cannot stand on this position whatsoever, because most people still listening to this show believe that fluoride is a good thing, you see. So if you are anti-fluoride, you and I are quacks. You know, to me, quack is a compliment, by the way, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Steve Garrison called Pam the crazy lady, and she says, thank you. And I said, hey, can you call me the crazy guy on this? Doctor, would you address the issue? We just assume, because mom told us, and maybe even our grandparents, oh, yeah, but fluoride, that really gives you healthy teeth. Is it effective?
No, it's not. There's no reliable evidence that it is. Really, the only reliable way to verify the efficacy of something like this, of any medication, is a randomized controlled trial. No such trial has ever been done in the 60 or 70 years of our experience with artificial fluoridation.
So why do the masses absolutely believe and would swear on a Bible or the Quran that fluoride is effective in giving you healthy teeth?
Well, that's a tough question. I can't look into the minds of the promoters of fluoridation and tell you what their motivations are. But I can give you some possible reasons. And I've dealt now with in 9 different provinces in Canada with medical and dental officers of health who either are abysmally ignorant of the scientific questions about whether it's effective and whether it's safe, or else they're lying to us. And the reason for that, well, I don't know, but of course, in many cases, perhaps in all cases in the provincial health departments, they know that if they don't, if they, well, I should put it this way, if they can't say anything to impugn fluoridation, to say that it's not wrong or that we have doubts about it, they'll lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, personally, I don't think their jobs are more important than the health of millions of people. But
well, let me just draw it closer to home. If someone at the London, the Middlesex London Health Unit stepped forward, heaven forbid it would be Chris Mackey, the guy in charge, if he suddenly had an epiphany and he said, wait a minute, I've done the research, read all the research, and I wish he would, and I've decided that fluoride is not ethical, it's not effective, and it's not safe, and I'm asking city council to get it, would he be able to keep his job?
Well, you know, I can't tell you that. I think he would be at risk of losing his job, but I don't think that would last long. If someone in his position to do what you're suggesting, that would move us along towards eliminating fluoridation everywhere very, very rapidly, and he would soon be recognized worldwide as a hero.
You know, the other thing that we find very frustrating is for many years now, even here on radio, is we've been asking the mayor, we've been asking the health unit to prove that it is safe. We have been asking for a safety study of some kind to prove that it is safe. And so far to date, Dr. Beck, nobody has come forward to show us that this product is safe.
Well, they argue, their standard phrase is, the mantra is it's safe and effective. But as I said, there's no evidence, reliable evidence that it's effective, except perhaps a slightly effective if it's topically applied to the teeth, but not if it's swallowed. And on the question of safety, there's almost no research done on that issue in the countries that fluoridate. We have hundreds of papers that are done in a competent way, peer-reviewed and published in respectable journals that point out the association. Now, we can't say proof exactly. Really, we can't say proof in any such case, but you can come very close to proof, and that is we say that the fluoridation is associated with. Well, we know that fluoridation is associated with lower IQ in children. It's associated with higher incidence of hip fractures in the elderly. It's associated with early onset of menstruation. It's associated with low sperm counts in men, and so on. There are perhaps four of these adverse effects where the evidence is very strong.
Dr. Beck, let me just jump in with this email, because here's what we're fighting. Exactly the kind of attitude that Brad shows in this email. And Brad, thank you for the email. Andy, seriously, and that's in capital letters, that's why I shouted, seriously, dropped one of the S's, Brad, but that's okay. I'm not a great typist either. Fluoride, again, give it up and move on to real topics. If you don't like it, Andy, Walmart sells lots of water. You don't need to use tap water. More informed people, I don't know, well, that doesn't fit in. And council have already made the decision. We drink lots of water from our taps, no health problems, perfect teeth. Find a real topic to explore. Pam, that's what we're fighting.
I know. People really believe that fluoride is a nutrient, which it is not. It's an essential nutrient. It is not an essential nutrient. It is not something that if you pull out, all of a sudden you're going to get health problems. So it's not essential to the body, and it's not doing anything as such. It's not going to render any health benefits.
Okay, let's look quickly, Pam, at what other cities are doing. We mentioned Calgary. Look at what's happening in Ireland and the evidence that's coming out of Ireland about
that's
the
right.
effects of fluoride.
Right, and then Kitchener-Waterloo as well pulled it out. But we have Declan Waugh over in Ireland, and he's been making some major successes in terms of removing it from Cork County and so on.
Israel.
Yes, Israel stopped.
Brad, yeah. Israel, Ireland, Calgary, Waterloo. The list goes on and on. These are intelligent people who've decided we're right and fluoride is wrong. Dr. Beck, what's most encouraging to you there in the city of Calgary, where you helped convince them to get rid of fluoride, as you look around the world on this issue? What's most encouraging to you that maybe we're going to soon reach a tipping point and people all over the world will get rid of fluoride?
Well, no, the most encouraging thing is that that's happening. More and more jurisdictions where fluoridation has been a longstanding policy are stopping it. And they're stopping it for these three reasons: that it's not ethical, it's not safe, and it's not effective, not substantially effective at any rate. And, of course, that's encouraging. It's also frustrating because it's so slow.
I want to say to Brad one more thing, if I could add. Brad, even if you think it is effective and even if you think it is safe, let's make a deal, okay? We're setting up a philosophy here that it's okay for me to slip over to your house while you're not looking, pour some drug into your favorite tea or coffee because I feel it's right. It's the proper medication for people who would think the way you do in your email, and it will cure you of whatever illusion that you are thinking of. Do I have that right, Brad? I rest my case. This is about ethics. We have just a moment left, Dr. Beck. Pam, set us up for Dr. Beck's visit without even jumping on a plane to London on Saturday.
That's right. Amazing what technology can do today. So he's going to be satellited in to King's College in the Vitali Lounge this coming Saturday at 4 o'clock. And this is a meeting that's being put on by Citizens Inquest. So there's more information on their website. And they've asked me also to moderate the question and answers. So I will be there as well.
Okay. And Dr. Beck, we're winning the battle. Here's an email from Robert to balance the one I just read. Andy, keep it up. My dad was part of a movement in the 1960s in Hamilton. I grew up with this, and in 1973, we left the city and moved to the country to get away from fluoride. All the best in this ongoing battle. So, Pam, for anyone who's interested, or even if you're not interested and you recognize you need to be informed on this subject,
they can find lots of information at the Fluoride Action Network, Fluoride Action Network, or fluoridealert.org, I believe is their website. And another issue, Andy, is that we still have yet to have a debate here in London on this issue. We have offered Dr. Connett will come to London if there's a debate, but the City Hall and the Health Unit refused to have a debate. We had a meeting, but it was not a debate.
Absolutely. Dr. Beck, we thank you so much for spending the time with us. We thank you so much for what you're going to do on Saturday, and we congratulate you for convincing tough city, the city of Calgary, to do something to change a policy, because they don't change their habits easily out there in Rocky Mountain country. So good for you.
Well, thank you. I thank you for what you're doing and on this issue, and I'm glad to help any way I can.
Okay.
Well,
and
thanks so much.
I have warm memories of Calgary, but I do remember that even in the month of May, it can snow. Is it snowing today?
Not today. We finally have spring.
Okay. But tomorrow's coming, and I've seen snow there in June, so don't get too comfortable. We'll see you on Saturday, Dr. Beck.
Okay.
Okay,
thank
terrific. You. Okay, so that's we said we're fighting two Fs today. Mm-hmm. One is fluoride.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is
Frankenfood.
Frankenfood. Set us up for what we're going to talk about on the other side of the break.
That's right. Very exciting this morning. We have Dr. Terry Vrain, who is a soil biologist, a former research scientist with Agriculture Canada. And for many, many years, he touted the benefits of GMOs. And then about 10 years ago, he started doubting the science. And today, he's a harsh critic of GMOs.
Okay, let's not assume anything about what our audience knows. What are GMOs?
Genetically modified organisms.
Do we have any in our grocery stores?
Absolutely. About 70% of the foods in the middle aisles of a grocery store will probably contain at least one ingredient that is genetically modified.
Yeah. And Frankenfoods is a lovely name, a lovely mm-hmm. title, but this is stuff we're eating, we're feeding it to our kids. What does the evidence suggest it may be doing to us?
Well, the research is showing, I think there's about 65 potential negative health effects associated with genetically engineered foods. And a couple of them might include things like infertility, increased risk of cancer, potential allergens as well, Andy. I mean, the list goes on.
And just in case the people think we're being anal, what have other parts of the world done with respect to GMOs?
They're labeled in many cases, so people at least would have a choice in knowing if they're eating genetically engineered foods or not. And in Europe, for example, you don't find them very much at all. So if they're there, they're labeled and you can avoid them. But here in Canada, we don't have a choice, you see.
Which is more offensive if you were to walk up to someone in France, if you said you're a Monsanto lover or you're an idiot? Which would be more? We'll delve into that on the other side of the break, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
You know, the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat.
Pam, we're launching war against two Fs this weekend in London, and this is not just in London, but around the world. Fluoride and Frankenfood.
They both involve polluting the planet. They're both basically involving toxic ingredients, and they're exposing us to these ingredients.
We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore.
So consumers are actually taking on the challenge themselves. We can't, for some strange reason, we can't get through to the government on this. They're not reading the literature. They're not taking on all the new information that we're seeing to say that we should not be using these toxic ingredients.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Yeah, they're mad as hell in Calgary and Waterloo and Israel and Ireland and Europe and all over the world. They're ditching fluoride, and we still have it in our water in London, and it is reducing the IQ of our children. Scientific evidence. Okay, that's the fluoride issue. Now we're going to move on to Frankenfood. What is Frankenfood, Pam?
This is food that has been genetically manipulated. It's basically an effort from industry to control our food supply is really the end result. But they make all these claims, Andy, that they're going to be able to feed the world with this technology and that allegedly they're going to reduce the amount of agricultural sprays that they impose on our ecology and so on. But none of these things is really true. These are just the claims that the biotechnology industry has made over the years.
I just want to recognize all my friends on the farm who right now are taking off their boots so they can throw them at the radio, because I take a lot of flack on this issue, because the farmers love these genetically modified crops and they love the name Monsanto. Tell us about the march this weekend before we introduce our guest.
That's right. This coming weekend on Saturday at 1:30 at Victoria Park, there'll be a protest, a march against Monsanto. I gather last year there were about 200 people at this event, so I assume that there's going to be more this year. And it is an international event as well. So if you're listening to this at another area of the world, make sure to look it up and see where it might be held in your town or city.
Last year, Pam, I'm looking at some of the promotional material for last year. One of the ads reads, "We march against Monsanto, 41 countries, 330 global marches, 200,000 participants."
So that was the number last year, and this year I assume the numbers will be bigger.
So
yes.
It's not just Andy and Pam up there in London being anal, but the world is catching on that what we're doing to our food products is dangerous.
That's right. And, you know, this issue about the chemical sprays and what it's doing to our land and our water supply, it's a big issue. And unfortunately, because things like fluoride and the chemicals that are being used in the fields are ending up in our water supply and we don't really see them or smell them, a lot of people are pretty complacent on this issue and they shouldn't be.
Okay. Now, one of the things I love about so many of the guests that you've brought onto the show on our health segment on Thursday is, like the guest we're about to introduce, someone who has been almost for a lifetime, in many cases, an expert in a certain area, even the PR person for a certain product. And then they have an epiphany.
They have an epiphany.
And they come in from the darkness and they find the truth. And my goodness, is that exciting. And this Dr. Vrain, who you're about to introduce, is one of those.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Thierry Vrain, he's from France originally, he lives here in Canada, he's out on the West Coast, and he used to work for many years, for 30 years he worked for Ag Canada, and then all of a sudden, about 10 years ago, he started researching the research, and he had an epiphany and decided, oh my goodness, these GMOs are not the sacred cow that they're claimed to be, and so he's been an outspoken critic of GMOs now, and he's been doing a lot of public speaking on this issue, so we're really grateful to have him on the air this morning. Good morning, Dr. Vrain.
Good morning.
Let me ask you, Dr. Vrain, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. What does it feel like to look back at everything you've said earlier in life and conclude you were lying through your teeth, except you didn't know it? That's a bit blunt. I understand.
Andy, you're blunt.
I certainly don't imagine that I was lying through my teeth at all. I had enthusiasm like all the genetic engineering researchers around me, all the scientists around me, that we were going to do wonderful things for agriculture and our civilization, et cetera, et cetera. What has happened is really in the last few years, I've realized that there's a lot of research outside of North America showing that there's serious concern. But what even has happened even more is about over the last year or so, I have also realized that there are many scientists who have a huge concern about the pesticide that is used on genetically engineered crops. And the conversation is really not about whether it's GMOs or Frankenfood or anything like that. It's just a straight, normal, simple, very simple story of a very toxic pesticide that has found its way in the food supply. And that's the story today.
I was talking to a young mom last night. She has three children. And I was telling her a little bit about your appearance on the show today. And she just looked at me and she said, Frankenfood, should I be concerned for my children? So let's start right there. Should moms of small children, dads of small children this morning be concerned about Frankenfoods, as we call them?
Everybody should be concerned. Frankenfood, I don't use the term. It's not really necessary. But engineered crops are basically designed to be sprayed with a herbicide. That is the technology. Okay, there's a few small engineered crops that are not herbicide, but really they're a minority. They're small. This is not where the problem is. Almost all engineered crops are sprayed with a herbicide Roundup. That's the technology from Monsanto. The herbicide Roundup has a long history. It started as a new molecule created in 1964. As a descaling agent to clean up industrial boilers and pipes of mineral deposits, very much like your kettle. Everybody has an electric kettle at home, and after a few months or a few years, there are mineral calcium deposits in the kettle. Same problem. If you can have a chemical that will dissolve these mineral deposits, then you win the game. And the chemical, the molecule, was called glyphosate, and it was patented in 1964 as the best of the bunch, the best they found, a very, very good descaling agent. That's the term that is used in a patent. A very, very good and very broad spectrum descaling agent, meaning it can solubilize basically any mineral, any atom of metals. Okay, so that's an industrial product. There's no problem with that. 1969, it was discovered possibly by accident, that it kills weeds, it kills plants, it kills almost all plants. This is a wonderful herbicide. It is now patented as a herbicide, and that's when Monsanto comes in the picture, acquires the patent, and makes history, because this herbicide is now the most bestseller of all pesticides ever. So we now have, so this is 1969, and so of course the herbicide is becoming more and more popular. This herbicide, this molecule, glyphosate, this is the active ingredient of the herbicide Roundup, has basically no acute toxicity, which means that it does not kill anything instantly. You can drink it and you'll be still standing the next day. You might get sick later. But when it was registered, patented as a herbicide in 1969, nobody ever imagined that it would become so popular that it is actually now a normal pollutant of the planet, and it's everywhere in the food supply. It's almost like a new ingredient in all our food, because in 1996... it became, with the first registration of all the engineered crops, corn and soy to begin with, it was now sprayed on all the engineered crops. So today, in 2014, we have about 500 million acres of engineered crops on the planet, which are doused every year with almost 2 billion pounds of glyphosate. That's a lot of chemical.
Now, there's researchers all around the world. There's Dr. Don Huber. There's the Seralini paper, Irina Ermakova. I mean, there's researchers around the world that are doing lab studies and casting a lot of doubt on the safety of the chemicals used during the process of growing these crops. So can you share some of the side effects, some of what you're seeing as a researcher?
Yes, and I don't think anybody has any doubt in the scientific community outside of North America. Not inside of North America. I make the difference because inside of North America, if you want to do research on this problem, you need permission from the manufacturer because this is trade secrets. This is patented trade secrets. You cannot do research. You cannot publish without their permission. So this is North America. Outside of North America, Russia, as you said, and Japan and Thailand and France, of course, most of Europe, many, many countries in Brazil as well, Argentina, many, many countries have done research on the effect, on the toxicity of glyphosate on living systems, human cells, mice and rats, etc. There is no doubt that it's incredibly toxic. It is not acutely toxic. It is chronically toxic. It is a slow, insidious, chronic toxicity.
So for the mother with the three children here in London, how could that affect her children?
You have to get off the idea that children and mothers are involved. Everybody should be concerned. It's not a question of mothers and feeding their kids or babies. Everybody is affected. The chemical glyphosate is a chelating agent. I said it was an industrial product to immobilize minerals. When it is in the food system, it basically immobilizes metal atoms, metal micronutrients. We need those metal micronutrients for our normal life. Every cell of a human being, every cell of any living system requires metal atoms to function. The enzymes, we call them enzymes, but really they're proteins. All enzymes are called metalloproteins. They need a metal atom in the center of the protein, of the molecule, to function. If you remove the metal atom, the micronutrients, the enzymes cannot work. You get sick.
Mm-hmm. Many years ago, Dr. Arpad Pushtai was speaking at the University of Guelph. And I was in the room listening to his talk, and there were several scientists there, Dr. Vrain, who have worked for the biotechnology industry, who have done research for the biotechnology industry. And they expressed their frustration because in, say, 5 years of doing research, if the outcome of the research didn't please their sponsors, the research would be brushed underneath a carpet. And so all their hard work would have been done in vain. So how is it that we're not really seeing, we're not hearing about what you're talking about? Why is the why aren't the researchers at the University of Guelph coming forward to talk to us about this issue?
This is North America. We are in the biotech bubble. We are in the home base of the large chemical companies that have become the biotech industry. They own much of the food supply, so to speak, and the seed supply or the influence, maybe they don't own it, but they certainly influence advertising agencies, newspapers, television, etc. This is where we are. We are in the biotech bubble in North America. Outside of North America, the picture is very different. Today, there are 64 countries in the world who are banning or regulating genetically modified crops because of this toxicity problem with the herbicide.
Wow, wow. Let me jump in, because I do that when somebody drops a bombshell. Can you just repeat the last 20 seconds of what you just said, because it encapsulates our entire discussion?
What I'm saying is we are here in North America, Canada, and the USA. We're in the biotech bubble. We are, you know, our eyes are covered, our ears are covered. We cannot hear, we cannot think. Outside of North America, there are 64 countries in the world who are today banning or regulating, labeling usually, genetically modified foods because they contain residues of a herbicide Roundup.
Okay, so can you take that one step further and explain why they would take such drastic action? What is the impact on our health that they're starting to see that would cause them to ban this these Monsanto products?
The impact on our health is evident in lab studies that have been done on mice and rats and human cells. There is also a lot of anecdotal evidence from Europe and many other countries. Dr. Carrasco in Argentina showed that if you inject minuscule quantities of glyphosate, the descaling agent, the chelator, into embryo, you get like serious embryonic defects. And his conclusion was that his conclusion shows that what they see in the field, Argentina has become like Brazil, has become the soy capital of the world. They grow immense acreage of soybean sprayed by planes with the herbicide, and meaning the whole country is basically sprayed with the herbicide, and people and children are born with severe malformations.
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on for 10 to 15 years now.
So would you say that, and I was just going to ask you, what is the most dramatic, serious health effect, a negative health effect from the Monsanto products that we're starting to see? Would that be it? And if so, can you again describe what the effect is?
No, it's a lot more diversified than this. We do not have any epidemiological studies done on human beings, on people, okay? We have no official study that show that, okay, people are eating engineered crops, engineered food that contain the residue, and then they get sick, and this is all well.
But this is tobacco science. They're just putting it out there and seeing how we react to it, essentially. We're all guinea pigs.
Yes. All we have today, and this is obviously something that the biotech industry, the chemical companies, would prefer not to have around. What we have today is the statistics from the USDA. The USDA keeps records every year of how many acres this year were planted in corn or soy or wheat or whatever crops every year. And they also keep track of how much pesticide was used. So how many thousands of gallons or tons of glyphosate was sprayed on wheat this year or soy or corn. The record is all public. So you have the statistics.
Doctor, I have to jump in. We have to take a short break. When we come back, I just want you to summarize everything that we have said in the last 20 minutes so that people have a takeaway and they will have reason to consider joining this march against Monsanto here in London with similar protests around the world. Back with Dr. Vrain in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Who can forget Peter Finch in the movie Network? And to a certain extent, what he is saying applies to this. Dr. Vrain, I want to apologize about something I said earlier. I had suggested that you, as you look back on your life as a representative for Agriculture Canada, you came to the realization that much of what you were saying was untrue. Let me ask you to compare the message that you used to give when you were the voice and the face of Agriculture Canada and what you're telling us today.
Sorry, start again. I'm not sure what you asked.
If you could compare the message that you used to give when you represented Agriculture Canada and now after doing your own research about GMOs, the message that you're giving us today.
Well, science evolves all the time. You know, you get new clues, you get new conclusions from research, etc., and I find it perfectly normal to change one's mind. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, this was a brand new technology and absolutely incredibly powerful technology. As scientists, I certainly had no difficulty thinking of taking DNA from a piece, you know, a gene from an organism.
So let's jump forward with this march against Monsanto in London and around the world. Why would you encourage people to consider joining the march against Monsanto this weekend in London or in whatever city they find themselves in the world?
We have a food crisis. We have a food supply by the biotech companies' own admission that basically 80% of the food in the stores contains engineered ingredients, contains engineered food from engineered crops, meaning they have residues of a very toxic pesticide. And we did not finish with your previous question as to how the symptoms are. I was explaining to you that the USDA keeps the statistics, and also the Center for Disease Control. You were asking me about symptoms. The Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, also keeps statistics about how many people were diagnosed with kidney failure this year, and how many people were diagnosed with autism, or how many, et cetera, et cetera. And you can put the two sets of data together, and you get amazing curves showing you that since 1996, with the advent of engineered crops, the rate of increase of most of our degenerative diseases over the last 20 years, the rate of increase is just shooting up. It's like the hockey stick curve. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like cancer, obesity, autism, kidney failure, liver damage, on and on and on. This is the work of Dr. Nancy Swanson.
Wow. I wish we had more time. We don't. You've summarized it beautifully in the last 30 seconds. The relationship between the products from Monsanto and the increase in all these degenerative diseases. That's quite a snapshot, Pam.
That's right. And I encourage everybody to be at Victoria Park this weekend, 1:30 p.m. for the March Against Monsanto, London, Ontario. That is the name of the Facebook group, by the way. And Dr. Vrain, do you have a website by chance?
I don't have a personal website, no.
But you are going to be doing a lot of speaking on this issue. I know you've been invited to.
I will probably be in London in November. I'm coming to Ontario in the last week of October for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then Quebec. So I am on a speaking tour in the fall.
Okay. We'll have you back on then for sure.
And we'll put the coffee on. Coffee beans aren't genetically modified, are they?
Not yet.
Not yet. But they're working on it. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Terrific. Okay, so we've declared war on fluoride and on Frankenfoods. Okay, the two events this weekend, Pam.
Okay, I'll repeat what's going on this weekend. It's going to be a busy weekend for activists. So on Saturday at 1:30 p.m., Victoria Park for the March Against Monsanto. At 4 p.m., King's College Vitali Lounge for the Citizens Inquest meeting with Dr. Beck on fluoride.
Okay, there it is. 11 o'clock news coming up on the other side of the news on a